Hey, how are you?
Good. Is this Grace?
This is Grace.
How's it going?
It's going really well. I can't believe that I caught you at a good time.
Yeah, well, you know, I spent a lot of time in the basement recording songs, but it's always good to take a break and talk to someone.
Awesome. No, I'm so glad. Let me tell you how I found you first. I wish that I could say that it wasn't poop related, because I feel like everyone somehow has a poop-related story of how they found you. I don't know if that's good or bad, but
yeah.
Most people keep like journals or diaries, I guess, sometimes, but I have an audio version on Spotify, and so every day I try to think of a song that represents the day, I guess. It sort of helps me remember what happens a little easier. And I try not to ever duplicate a song within a calendar year. And so sometimes something will happen and I can't think of a song, which is kind of rare, but it happens. And in this case, my dog had an anal gland issue.
Okay.
I had to take him to the vet. And so during my lunch break at work, I just started searching on Spotify, like things related to that.
Yeah.
And
did you find the dog has diarrhea? Was that the one?
No, I actually, I think it was... Which is amazing that you have a song called "My Dog Has Diarrhea." Of course you do. I haven't somehow gotten deep enough into your catalog to find that one yet, but I think it was just the smelly butt song that I hit, and I was like, "Hey, this will work. Like, I can do this." And of course I saw the title of the person who created it. It said the guy who sings your name over and over, and I was like, "That's funny. What does that mean?" So I clicked on that, which brought me to your just sort of like huge laundry list of songs with different people's names in them. Which I thought was hilarious, and I just started laughing immediately. And of course, then it led me to all these other artists. It was like, you know, if you like this guy, you may like these other guys. And I was like, this is all the same guy. This is amazing.
That's exactly how I would have written it out. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, I loved it so much. I was literally sitting in my car during my lunch break, crying. Like, I was like in tears. Cause I just thought this is so smart and so unique. And I ran it. I think the next album I found was All the Apologies. And it was just these very specific and absurd things that you were apologizing for. It was just such a unique, artistic effort. And I had no idea at the time how extensive it was, but I just sort of started deep diving at that point for the past few days. I've listened to a few podcasts. I listened to your Beautiful Anonymous call, which was amazing that you got in on that.
That was nice. I picked up a good amount of supporters after that one. And trying to stay I barely stayed anonymous. I was dropping so many hints.
Obvious. Yeah, I think right off the bat, I don't think that you're going to... I think when you said I've written this many songs, then that's the giveaway. And I'm surprised that he actually didn't just not believe you, you know, like he actually said, oh, and then he started asking more questions about it, because I feel like if it had been me and someone had said that they had written tens of thousands of songs, I would have said like, okay, I've got a lunatic on the line that's lying to me, you know, that's...
Yeah. I think I got the feeling that he had a producer in the other room who was like, kind of like, searching some of the things I was saying, and was probably giving him like the thumbs up, like this is real sort of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know that for sure, but yeah, that was great. That was a great any chance to pounce on media exposure. I'm on it. You know?
Noted. I noticed some running themes in that interview, like about anti-tortured artist idea, and kind of the anti need to be in a big city to do the work, kind of beauty in the mundane. And I wondered if you from the beginning kind of had like a list in your mind, or if you actually have a literal list of things that you're trying to accomplish as far as like changing the culture or changing the idea of what being a creative person looks like, or if it's just kind of...
The main thing that on my list is just to make more music and movies, so that's like the main thing, but then it's kind of just, you know, in my adventures art I've just come across. What seems to me as like a cliche and antiquated concept of what an artist is, you know, and it just makes me mad all the time. Because it's like, no one respects me because I'm not like some dour, you know, tortured soul, you know, because people's, like, the average person doesn't think about, like, creativity much, and they just have, like, the Hollywood-style idea of what an artist is, and that's it, and, you know, if you're just a normal person in a small town, and you say, like, I'm a songwriter, they don't believe you, or they're just like, oh, that's cute, you know?
Right.
So yeah, you know, I'd love to be this, you know, to start a movement or whatever, but definitely the primary interest, like, worrying about starting a movement could definitely get in the way of actually creating art, so I don't dwell on it too much, you know?
Yeah, okay. I was thinking also about, you kind of have no control. I feel like I've noticed in my own friends who have created stuff that you don't really have any control over what picks up steam and what doesn't. And one of the things, like, I noticed, I have another friend who creates stuff quite a bit, does filmmaking, and they spend a lot of time making this incredibly compelling sort of short series on Vine many years ago, where they sort of took little 6-second chunks of life and talked about it in the third person, but they were actually sort of telling their actual real life story as they were getting divorced. And it was very, very intense and very heartfelt. And it got a little bit of traction. I think he had probably maybe 30,000 people watching it. And then later on, he did a thing where he just like sort of grinded into the air to My Pony, the song Pony, in front of like various landmarks. And of course that just went completely viral, right? Like he had like millions and millions of people watching him just like grind his junk like wordlessly in front of like the Eiffel Tower or whatever as he was traveling. And it was always like fascinating to me because I thought that must be absolutely infuriating. I mean, maybe it's not, but it seemed to me to be like totally absurd and ridiculous and almost upsetting that something that had like real meaning supposedly like didn't catch on like this other completely sort of meaningless thing. And so I wondered if you ever feel that, like, that sort of push-pull, or like, does anything really have meaning? Does it even matter? If you have something that's like more meaningful to you, maybe, that doesn't get picked up as much as like something that's like poop, 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 that's like huge, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, no, I mean, exactly. You know, like, I don't do poop songs just because they're profitable, but, you know, like, I was doing them anyway, just, like, it's just funny, but I also, from the beginning, have been writing, you know, what I think are, like, really good songs, and I still put out albums that are just straightforward collections of good compositions, and, like, no, you know, no one listens to any of them. So, it you know, it's, I say no one, but maybe 100 people listen to them, and, like, those people are very loyal. They listen, I do a podcast, they listen to my podcast, and I do a show once a year, which was just a week ago. We did a 5.5-hour concert. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
But, you know, people were singing along to my serious songs, which was pretty, you know, fantastic. But, yeah, 100%, and... You know, if I was making money off of the quote unquote good songs, I'd probably sing a lot less poop songs.
Did you ever end up quitting your day job, or are you still doing a day job while you do this?
I quit my day job a little over 2 years ago. So yeah, this is pretty pretty beautiful. Lately I've been pulling in about $4,000 a month from like Spotify and all those other music sites, and on top of that I do custom songs for people at $65 a pop, and you know I get like anywhere from like 5 to 20 orders a week for those, so it's good. Yeah, I'm married with 2 kids, and we're making it work.
That's absolutely incredible, and I'm so thrilled for you, because I know God, you put in like so many years of this that I think you've well earned the right to be able to just have fun with it and to be able to make a decent living on it. And actually, that sort of leads to my next question. I hope you're okay with like the fact that I'm basically interviewing you.
This is the best.
Okay, good. I love it. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, it kind of leads to the next thing for me, which is like how your friends, family, like if they kind of were supportive of you from the beginning, if they questioned any of it, or if, you know, if it's affected, or if now that you have like a partner and kids, if that, how that affects your ability to create for better or worse.
Yeah. Let's see. So, I mean, for the, you know, I graduated college in 2000, and then for the next 17 years, I worked at a group home for teenagers.
Wow.
You know, it's good to be helping people, but it's also, the hours were such that it was like you work 40 hours in 3 days, you know?
Right.
And then that gives you 4 days where you're not working. The pay is you know, is awful. But, you know, if all you're doing when you're not working is at home recording music, then it's enough money. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So basically what I'm saying is I you know, especially for the first 10 years, I just kind of, like, built my life around having time to make music. You know, that was like my main concern. And people didn't care, friends and family. They're like, whatever, you know, do your thing.
They sort of just saw it as a hobby, so it doesn't matter. Like, it's not you weren't trying to say, like, I'm trying to make it in LA and I'm waiting tables, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah, and I think, yeah, that's the thing. Or some people, you know, some people, like, don't make enough to make ends meet while they're pursuing their dream. It's like, well, you know, stop, get a job, you know, and it's so much more expensive to live in LA and wait tables, and I feel like there's a lot of other distractions. I lived in Manchester, New Hampshire, you know, which was like an hour away from where I grew up, but I did that on purpose too, because I didn't want to be near my friends who might like want to hang out. I'm not a fan of hanging out. I'm not a fan of cookouts. I just feel like what are we doing? We're just standing around talking. This is awful. Like, think of the songs I could be writing right now. So yeah, definitely I kind of like designed my life around that. And you know, I still have friends though, I promise. And the way I socialize is usually like we make a movie, you know? I'm like, "All right, everyone, we're making a movie." And that's the way I hang out with my friends. We're doing something productive. So, and now, you know, now I'm married with kids. It's, if it wasn't my income, then it would be hard to justify all the hours I'm down here, but it is. So, you know, so it worked out pretty well.
Do you find that having kids has had any effect on your ability to continue to do what you love?
Gives me less time to do it, and so I just got to be that much more focused when I do have time to do it. And it's made me think, like, wow, I thought I was productive 10 years ago, but I used to, you know, walk to the movies and watch a movie that wasn't even good and then walk home, and that would eat 5 hours of my day, and it's like, that's crazy. I couldn't consider doing that now.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. And actually, that reminds me of wanting to ask you about the walking. So I know you write, I don't know if you still do this, but I saw something about you handwriting a newsletter about walking. Is that still a thing? And when did that start? And like, just the walking, yes, and the newsletter.
I've done it monthly since 2006. And I literally handwrite it and photocopy it, fold it and staple it, and to my small readership. I think most of them throw it away as soon as they get it.
Wow.
I think it's like, I feel like if you get into the habit of not following through on things, then it's like a snowball effect, you know? And so my approach is like, if you start a project, you have to finish it, or else that'll become your new habit. Your new habit will be not finishing a project. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is there, but there is no finish when you start a project. Is there, like with this, right? Unless you just suddenly lose your legs.
I gotta be more careful
about what you start.
Set out to do.
Have you always been a prolific walker?
When I graduated college, I rode my bicycle from Massachusetts to Florida, so that was good. I just like adventures and whatnot, and then the walking started around then, and just a month ago I walked 27 miles, and that was good, but I don't walk nearly as much as I used to, you know.
Yeah, you had to cut down on the 27 miles a day.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. So yeah, I'm trying to do four. I'm trying to average 4 miles a day. The best is when I can push. My kids are just 2 and 5, so I can push them in the double stroller to a few parks and get some miles in, and they get some outdoor time, and everyone's happy.
There you go. Multitask. Yeah. That makes sense. Let's see. Do you ever get bored of a project, or do you, when you start it, are you just so into it? Like, do you ever feel like, I don't know if I can continue this, or I don't want, like, I need to take time off from this?
Yeah, I definitely get bored. I mean, the ones where I'm singing a person's name over and over again, I mean, that's awful. It's not fun at all. But yeah, even things that, I'm passionate about it, then I start to lose interest, but I try to press on, and sometimes it's like once you got past that point of disinterest, like sometimes then like the best songs come out when you're like, you know, you're for some reason, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but just like you've given up, and then once you give up, then you can really get a good one out.
Yeah. Yeah, that like releases all of the sort of tension of what was holding you back from being able to actually make something.
Yeah, my friend, the first band I was in was called Moe's Haven with my friend Tom, and like oftentimes we'd do a whole weekend of writing songs and then start packing up and then be like, let's just do one more, and then like oftentimes that was the best one.
Yeah, I heard it wasn't Moe's Haven, but I think it was like one of your more recent, I guess, serious, if you want to call it that, projects, and it was called Rainbow Street. I really, really liked it.
Nice. Yeah. That's from... So that one is by the very nice, interesting singer man. And,
of course.
I've developed a very long story. Like, if you, like, follow his trajectory, he's just singing, like, mundane songs about, like, transportation and food, and not food, but, like, clothing and whatnot. But then he goes insane. And he has an album called Keep Being Awesome, where he's not singing novelty songs, he's singing about his miserable, sad existence, and then, but then he meets Kathy, and that's what that whole album is about.
Oh, that's funny.
When he falls in love. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I did see, like, one of the sets that was I'm not sure. It was poop related. I don't know which one of the poop artists, because I know you have more than one poop artist, but one of them had like love songs in the middle. Like it was like 10 different albums, but one of them was like just love songs.
Yeah. That's what I do lately is I'll take an artist that only does one thing, and then suddenly they snap, and they like, I gotta just express myself, and they do that. So yeah.
That's a fantastic. It was so funny. Like just, again, just the being able to discover, you know, it is definitely just an endless rabbit hole that it wasn't at first, though. You know, I think that's the interesting thing to me is that, like, looking at it now, it's just this massive, massive thing full of all of these hilarious little, like, nooks and crannies and stuff. But did you know from the beginning, did you have, like, a map of, like, where you were going? Or is it, like, did you know, I want to set out and write 20,000 songs, or... did it just kind of naturally progress?
Well, first off, do you have Amazon Prime or no?
I do.
Okay. I made a movie called Local Legends. So you can search that on Amazon Prime, and it'll answer a lot of your questions. But
nice.
I'll tell you. But yeah, you know, I was in that band, Moe's Haven, and no one was buying our albums or songs, except, like, we had a song that mentioned Hugh Grant in the title, and a song about a goldfish, and both of them were earning us like $2 or $3 a year, which is awful. But I looked at those stats and I was like, wait a second, what's the situation, the common theme is the titles are unusual. You know, they're about unusual topics for songs.
Right.
And for like a year, I kind of like was like, you know, I wonder if I can make like 10,000 or 20,000 songs like that, and that might actually earn me enough money that I can, you know, quit my day job. So, but you know, the whole like the very nice, interesting singer man's, you know, depths of his soul concept that I just made that up as I went along, kind of.
it just naturally.
Yeah, well, built I mean, up. when I did the first album songs about my house and stuff, there was no master plan, you know, that he'd meet a girl named Kathy at a rock concert later.
It seems like...
I'm so glad you heard that song. That's one of my favorite recent ones.
Oh, I really, really liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's just, I mean, I was torn between trying to consume as much of the content as I could before I talked to you to try to not ask you the same questions over and over that you have to answer over and over. Because, and especially if I could...
You're doing great. Are you a writer or what?
What's no, I'm nothing. I don't know what I am. I think I'm trying to figure it out. I think that's the whole thing. Like, I've done a million different little things that were just seemed logical to me at the time to do. I've met a bunch of celebrities, but in like very odd ways. Okay, I'll tell you one story, and either you'll think that's really interesting and endearing, or you'll be like, that is psychotic.
Okay, I'm ready.
So hold on to your hat. So when Conan O'Brien lost his Tonight Show gig, it was really, really frustrating, I think, for everybody because of, you know, to watch, because it just seemed very unfair, even though he got paid out, you know, $1 billion. And
yeah.
But he also had to sign, you know, all the usual corporate things about not being able to talk about it. And I knew that was sort of his dream for a very long time. And to publicly be sort of humiliated and lose your dream had to be extremely disappointing. And I'd been a huge Conan fan for a long time, and it was very hard for me to sort of watch this happen and not feel like I couldn't try to make it better somehow. And I have this feeling all the time where it's like I want to help fix things that are like way outside of my responsibility or purview. But in this case, I thought, like, how can I make Conan feel better? So my thought was, try to help him know that who he is and what his worth is sits outside of his accomplishments and sits within who he has been from, like, the beginning of time, like, whatever he was born with. So I knew a little bit about his background. I knew he went to Harvard, and Harvard keeps all of their thesis papers forever in, like, the libraries. In their like microfiche or whatever.
Nice.
And so I wrote to the library and asked if they still had Conan's sort of like final work, whatever it was. I had no idea what it would be. And they did. So I paid them. It was not even that much. It was like I paid like $20 or something for them to pull it and copy it and send it to me.
Yeah.
And they did. And it was called like, it was like the works of Flannery O'Connor and the Image of the New South or something like that. I don't know.
Nice.
It was, I'm gonna be honest, boring as shit, right? Like, I remember trying to read it and just being like, God damn, this is so, but it was very, you could tell that he was super interested in this thing, and it had nothing to do with comedy, it had nothing to do with anything, it was just like something he was really, really interested in, something that he had spent a really long time working on, and something that had gone really well for him, like, the grades still was on there, the comments from his professors were still on there, and I thought, if I can show him this, it might sort of like spark something in him to remind himself of like other parts of himself, or that he, you know, times in which he had been successful that has nothing to do with this sort of like huge catastrophe happened. So the next thing was like, well, how do I get this like in his hands? So he was doing the tour at that time. And this was before TBS had picked him up. This is when he was just sort of going from city to city and playing music, because he wasn't even allowed to, like, do a lot of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw they made a documentary about it.
Yeah.
On Ryan Can't Stop.
Yeah. So I went to his DC stop, which is the closest to where I was at the time. And then I just waited until I figured out how to kind of get where his people were. And I showed some of the crew, like the documentary crew was still there following him around. And I was like, oh, I would love to like show him this. And they're like, oh, this is cool. Yeah. Like we can help you. And so they got me in there and I was like, hi. And then I lied. I totally lied. I went up to him and I was like, hey, I go to Harvard and like, I read this work and it was like really, really important to me. It really helped me with my writing, like that I was doing with the works of Flannery O'Connor. It was like, so, I mean, it's obviously like total bullshit, but he was like, oh my God, you know, like what? Oh my God, I haven't seen this. And he started like reading it, like parts of it aloud to the group and like the parts that he really liked. And like, and he was very funny about it. He's like, oh, I was such an asshole, you know, and like, and he really was like so happy about it. And then we'd like hung out for a little while and like, he just like literally just like read the whole thing. Like he was just, he hadn't seen it since he had written it like a billion years ago. And, you know, he's like really happy for the moment. And I was like, oh, okay. Like maybe that was like somehow successful or like made him happy for a minute, which made me happy. And then later on, he won the people, this was like 6 months later, he won the People's Choice Award. And at that point he had gotten his TBS show and he was kind of feeling back in the swing of things a little bit. And they were interviewing him and they're like, well, you just went on tour. Like, what did it mean to you? Like, was it fun? Whatever. And he was like, well, like the weirdest thing that happened, it was like probably the greatest thing that ever happened was like, this is really crazy. Like we have all these crazy young fans, which I thought was hilarious. Cause I'm not that young, but I was like, nice. Like they're real excited. And they like, they come and like, somebody brought me my college thesis and I hadn't seen it for a really long time. Like, he like, and so he's like, it was really cool. And, yeah, so like it, yeah, it made me really happy. But
that's legendary. That's a great story.
It thanks.
Not psychotic.
Maybe a little. I think anytime you do something or you do things that are different or creative or innovative, like it's gonna, anything that's unusual could seem crazy, right? I'm sure you do have people who would look at, like, what you're doing and just say, like, he must be insane, or, you know, like, that's...
Right, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, I most people are really boring, I guess, you know, what it comes down to.
I mean, I think so. I love people. I also loathe them. I can't tell what I think. But, like, I definitely... But, like, that, there's nothing about the things that I do that make any like coherent sense to me in terms of like as in an artistic or like a, even like a monetary way. Like I'm not trying to, so like doing that for Conan, I'm not trying to get fame or money from that. That's something that I'm doing. That's like a very sort of personal, unique kind of just between me and myself and what I think is like, could be some good that I would bring to the world, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's a good story too, though. You know, if you ever write a memoir or something.
I know, I hear that all the time. So I have a lot of stories like this and people are like, you gotta write a memoir. And I'm like,
yeah.
I can't, the idea of, I guess for me, the toughest thing is like the idea of stopping doing the thing that I'm doing that I would write about makes me not able to write the memoir, because I'm like, well, then I would have to like spend time. I'd have to like take a year off from searching learning and going on adventures and trying to change these moments in time or whatever. Like I'd have to stop that stuff and then just write about it, which is
and so well, just take note. Life is long, so you know, you can just take notes so you don't forget a few, you know.
Yeah,
do it in 10 years or something. Yeah,
I agree. I think I have written, you know, I have written a little bit about different things, but I've never like compiled it in any particular way. And I also don't know what the purpose. So like one of the first questions that I asked you was like, did you have a goal in mind or like anything? Because part of me sees everything that I could possibly do like that as sort of really self-aggrandizing, which I think for you, you've sort of been like, well, all artists are.
Yeah.
They're all self-promoting. Like,
yeah. I mean, and I'm sure I said it on that podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, they all hide behind publicists. You know, which is embarrassing. Yeah, and I mean, you know, Conan, he seems cool and great, but I mean, you know, he must have the biggest ego on earth.
Oh,
you know?
Everyone does. I don't know why I feel. I'm sure it's like a savior complex thing. I'm sure there's a million like I'm sure that's a rabbit hole I could go down forever about why I feel like there's any sort of need to like rehabilitate people that are have everything they already need. Like, oh no.
You know, everyone has hobbies, you know. People go nuts over football teams, you know, they get the logo tattooed on them and stuff, you know. So I'd rather find Conan's thesis than do that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the way I feel about it. Like, I enjoy, I don't know, like, pardon my French, I guess. I enjoy sort of fucking with, like, the notion of there being any differences among people. So, like, I don't look at celebrities and think of them as different than me, and I don't look at, like, homeless people and look at them as different than me. Like, and I love the, like, the sort of audacity of change, being able to change someone's existence, even briefly, who seem bigger, so much bigger than myself, or so much different than myself, or it just reminds me that we're all exactly the same. We have the same.
No pressure, but just keep in mind, if you like adventures, October of 2020 is my next 5.5-hour epic concert.
I will tell you this: if I am alive in October of 2020, which I hope that I am, I don't know why I wouldn't be, but you never know. But if I am, I will absolutely be there.
The people came. We had people from all over the country and Canada, even, who all met here and rocked out for a bunch of times, but also just hung out with each other. And everyone who comes is kind of like you, just like, you know, artistic and adventurous and interesting. So
I have no doubt. I'm sure it's an absolute blast. I mean, that's kind of, so I'm out of my like preformed questions. We're just rolling on how, what I'm thinking. So at any point, if you're like, you know what, I have to go like wipe my ass now. And so bye, feel free to do that. But I also could end up just talking forever, but it reminds me of, the idea of like, whether it's better to have, for me, it's always been better to have maybe 500 people or 1,000 people or 100 people who really understand who I am, what I'm doing, what, like, that I'm writing to, because I do write about this stuff, but to only to basically the people who I actually know in real life. Like, I don't publish stuff for like public consumption. And I think that has been more meaningful to me, because I feel like I'm connecting with real people and we can have a conversation about it, rather than I'm trying to like teach some people that I don't know some kind of profound thing. And also, I see sort of this negative for me about the idea of when things are publicly available, people can just like tear it up and shit all over it. So like, I notice with a lot of online platforms, sometimes people will put out work and then there will be literally like 10,000 kids or teens or something that will just like hoard, you know, like throw all kinds of just ridiculous stuff in the comments. And like, I don't know if I, like, that's always driven me a little crazy. And then I'm like, well, I don't know. Is that even a concern? Like, is that a concern? Should that be a concern? Do you give a shit? Like, who's consuming your content? Or I guess it doesn't really matter, but
I read every review. I seek out every review.
Oh God.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it is negative. And then, you know, even like when I was on Beautiful Anonymous, a lot of like on Reddit or whatever, the comments were like, that guy's awful, I can't stand that guy, blah, blah, blah. So, but...
Oh, my God. How does that...
Yeah.
That's got to affect you somewhat, but I feel like that... I don't know if I have the stomach for 1,500... I remember I have a friend who... I almost said autistic guitarist. I meant acoustic guitarist, but honestly, it's probably both. Like, he plays music, but he only shows his hands and he doesn't ever show his face. And he's got all sorts of kind of issues that are sort of causing that. He's not actually trying to be like, mysterious. He's just,
it's a good gimmick either way, though.
It is. But I naturally I felt like super protective of him. And as he kind of became more and more famous, you would just have this horde of like people and comments and ridiculous things and kids, you know, begging him to do certain songs and what song is it, and just it was just this flood of, to me it just seems so noisy. I think of like Twitter that way, where it's just like yelling, you know, it's just this like this mass yelling. And I don't know if I can handle, and it sucks, because I think that maybe part of that is why I don't publish as much, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean,
how do I stop? I don't know. Is it just like, do you just get more, is it sort of like building calluses when you play guitar? Is it just slowly you just stop caring?
Yeah. But I definitely, came to it with a real heightened, view of myself. My closest friends are all want to just knock me down several pegs all the time, and I appreciate them for their attempts, but as much as they try, I'm like, no, nope, I'm the best. So yeah, I've felt like, you know, people have been trying to make me see how bad I am, since I was a kid, you know, mostly in the way that friends do for each other, But you know, I came into it very much able to handle it. But it still makes me a little, you know, it's mostly when people write me off when clearly they haven't looked into what I do. They just, like, guy writes 20,000 songs and then they respond by being like, well, they must all be awful. And it's like, well, you know, listen to a few of them, you know. My goal is not just to create great art, but to I want it to be out there, and I want people to hear it, and I want to make enough money off it to live. So I think that's part of the deal. So I'm happy to. Basically, if someone's talking about it, then that's much better than even if they're saying bad things, it's much better than nobody's talking about it. You know?
Yeah. Why do you think you want people? Like, I guess that kind of ties into the beginning question of like whose approval, if any, are you seeking? Or is it really just I want people to know who I am, because that's just part of like my innate sort of self?
Yeah, I don't know, just I've always read a lot of like music criticism and film criticism and whatnot, and I've just been like, people should talk about my work like this, you know, it's that, but, you know, I daydream of them teaching an entire college course about me, but, frankly, you know, I'm pretty happy where I am at this level, which is, you know, real low, the level that I'm at, but,
That's very surprising. It is actually very surprising to me that it's been so. I mean, on the other hand, you just don't know when people, you know, it just can happen out of absolutely nowhere, in the same way that like a poop song can take off. Like, it's very strange, but when, you know, somebody notices something, and then things tend to snowball. So
yeah, I know, it feels like it could happen, but it's also felt like, at least especially for the last 5 years, it's like, I think it's gonna happen real soon.
When Fallon happened, did it change anything for you? Like, I mean, obviously it must have been exciting, but like, do you feel like it satiated any part of you, or did it just make everything more intense, like the need to?
No, I mean, it was good. It's good because, you know, it gives, when I tell people I'm a songwriter, they just roll their eyes, and then I mention I was on the Tonight Show, they're like, oh, really? So it's good for bragging rights, I guess, but it didn't really advance my career in any way, but you know, I guess it gives me a little bit of credibility, but it definitely wasn't like an overnight sensation situation. I mean, the song they had me sing was not one of my best. If I had done a poop song, it probably would have gone over better.
I think that there's just a huge problem that people have with thinking of anything comedic as also being musical. Like, you have to do one, or like, if a song makes you laugh, then it's not really a song, or it's not really
there's a movie, Barry Lyndon, by Stanley Kubrick, I don't know if it's from the 70s, and it's like a 3-hour long like period piece, and it seems really like serious and like scholarly almost, but if you watch it long enough, you realize that the whole movie is like also a comedy, and that's just my what I like is like simultaneously funny and heartbreaking, sort of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not that used to be a Pizza Hut qualifies as that. But there's definitely, like, I guess I'd be smarter if I hid the comedy within the tragedy rather than the other way around. But, hey, what can you do?
There's still time.
Yeah, I just turned 41, so I feel good.
Congrats. Yeah.
Just hitting my prime.
Yeah. Yeah, I turned 35 in August, and I definitely had, like, all last year, I think I had a huge midlife crisis of, like, and I think that's why I'm searching even harder now to figure out, like, what the second half of my life, if I'm lucky enough to have, like, a second half, like, what do I want that to look like? One of the first things I did was go on The Price is Right, because that had, I looked at my sort of list of, I don't know, my bucket list or whatever. And that had been on it since I can remember time. Like, I think the first thing I ever saw was The Price is Right through my crib bars. And I'd always said, I'm definitely going to go. And I said that for years. I just kept saying it. And I was like, what am I waiting for? Am I waiting for someone else to tell me, like, now it's time, or I'll go with you, or, like, whatever? Like, why am I doing that? I literally just got in my car and drove. I live in North Carolina. And I just drove all the way to California, just, like, straight to the studios. Straight to got in the line, was picked like the second person, and won a trip to France. I'm going this summer. It was like completely ridiculous, but it was a huge moment for me because it made me realize, like, what's
so, you must be Grace Carnes. Are you Grace Carnes?
I am.
All right. Have you on your record yet?
I have. Well, I just ordered it like yesterday.
Okay. It'll get there. It'll get there real soon. Sorry to interrupt the.
No.
I was like, wait, North Carolina, I sent a record there just recently.
Ta-da! Yeah, I love records. That's a whole other thing, and that's very cliche. But I feel like I liked records before it was cool and after it was cool. Like, in the middle stage when no one gave a shit, like, that's when I was... So I feel like that gives me some kind of, like...
Oh, yeah, I know, it's cool. It's totally cool.
It came back into style. But there's something tangible about being able to, like, you know, obviously now so much is digital, so it's cool to have something that's... you can physically touch.
Yeah, and it's not anywhere else either. That record is not online, so it's
Special. Exclusive. Exclusive.
So you drove the whole country? That's fantastic.
Yeah, but it made me realize that what was stopping me was literally just me, right? Like, there was... Yeah. The only reason I hadn't done that is that I hadn't done that. And I... and it made... You know, so I think that was a moment, a huge sort of turning point for me to... really take stock and, like, what do I want to do? Now just go do it. And I think the first step of that is, what do I want to do? Right? Like, I can't go, can't go do it until I know for sure what it is.
There's too many options.
Oh,
you know,
I know.
So I guess you need that focus, you know, that kind of obsessive focus on one thing, you know, because otherwise if you're just dabbling in a bunch of things, it's hard to get anywhere with any of them, you know?
God, I know it. And that's what I can't, so I feel like I don't know what the fuck I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm trying.
Yeah, so you work in Durham or what?
Yeah, I worked at Duke for many years, and I worked first at the National Center for Child Trauma, and I was just doing basic, like, admin finance stuff, nothing like hardcore about it, but I always felt like I was a cog in the wheel of work that was important. And then we got, when Trump was elected, it was a federal grant funded thing, so it got downsized. I ended up in the administration of Duke and sort of learned all of the, like, secret nook and cranny, like, evil that they were hiding, because, like, every big institution, if it's a church or university or anything, they're hiding some kind of horrible thing, right? And so I've found all these horrible things. I mean, really horrible things, right? Like, there was child endangerment, there was sexual abuse, there was all sorts of stuff that Duke's covering up. Just like every other, you know, I don't think Duke has a stranglehold on doing bad stuff, right? But it still bothered me because I thought, oh no, like, even if I'm doing just minor work here, I'm still sort of aiding and abetting, like, whatever's happening. So I just quit, like, literally just walked in one day, put myself in a box, didn't give 2 weeks notice, nothing. I just, like, walked out and was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, but it's not this. And that's when I left and drove to California and went on The Price is Right. I did. I took my retirement early, like, and so I had, you know, enough money to, you know, live on for about a year. And I just did all these things that I had been putting off, you know, like, I just took care of a lot of, like, needs in my family and places I had really wanted to visit. I'd really wanted to go see Fred Rogers, like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Like, I wanted to see his grave, and I wanted to see like the museum and where he lived. Like, I wanted to know more about him. There were other people that I wanted to like research more, and I, that's kind of where I'm at now. I now work at a place that does reconstruction after disasters, like physical reconstruction of buildings and houses and stuff after like fires and hurricanes and whatever, which is really fascinating just because it's like it's like disaster every day, which I love, right? It's very exciting because we get to fix it. You know, like I said, there's something innate within me that's always trying to fix things. But in the meantime, that's sort of like a day job. And then I'm still thinking a lot about creatively, like, what am I trying to do or accomplish? Like, what am I trying to, and so certainly anytime somebody inspires me, I want to try to like connect with them in some way and figure out like what their story is and what their thought process has been to see if I can learn and,
that's great. Yeah,
learn about them. And maybe that'll help me learn about me. I don't know.
And that's how you end up on the phone with the poop song guy.
I'm so grateful though that you're easy to connect with. I mean, I think when you talk about the tortured artist, I mean, one of the biggest challenges I've had is that there are people who really inspire me who are also either drug addicts or have serious mental illness or are just assholes, right? Like, right. And it's just, but they still inspire, you know, their work, just because I think we all can tell in Hollywood, like, just because you're a horrible asshole doesn't mean you're also not extremely talented in some way,
right.
Or passionate or whatever. And so trying to figure out ways to connect with some of those people has been really challenging. So I'm really grateful that it's as easy as just calling you.
Yeah. Well, no, this is a great conversation. I'm a big fan of North Carolina. You ever go to Topsail Island, Surf City?
I have not been there, but I've heard great things. I have a son who's 10, and his dad is a professor at Duke and often gets like a like a cabin at Topsail for like 2 weeks and takes him there for the summer. So I've heard great things, great reviews from a child about how great how great that is.
Yeah, it's right near Wilmington. Wilmington's a cool little city too. Yeah,
if you can believe it, I've never been to the beach here. The only beach I've been to on the East Coast was the Jersey Shore when I lived outside New York, which is not really, shouldn't be counted as like, I mean, there's like needles washing up and
yeah.
it's not a good beach experience. I definitely need to go out and check that out this summer because I've been meaning to for a long time, but it, you know.
Yeah, I haven't done the Outer Banks, but it was on my bike trip down the East Coast that I stopped at Surf City, and I loved it, and I've been back a couple times since then. It's perfect. Yeah, I like it.
That's awesome. I have a comedy guy here in Carolina who skateboarded from Carolina down to Florida. I guess there is some sort of trail or something that connects.
Yeah, I wasn't on a trail. I got a bunch of maps that showed you the best like secondary roads.
Wow.
That, you get down there, you know. It was great. Yeah, it was real fun. It was just by myself. But, you know, yeah, and I've done the cross-country thing like you did. I've done that a bunch of times, solo missions like that. I love a good road trip, so.
Yeah, same. I did most of the trip by myself. I've done many, many road trips on my own. There's something about it that, I mean, I love people, but I do need the time to just, like, think, and I love definitely driving and just being able to stop any place that catches my attention and not having
to
like
explain it to someone.
Not have to check in and see what they want to do.
Well, this has been great, and thanks for ordering the record. That's fantastic.
I was wondering.
The record sells so rarely that I'm like, who's this mysterious record buyer? What is going on?
Well, thanks for making the record. And I looked at your website, obviously, and like looked through a few things and thought, and then ran onto that and was like, oh, nice. Like, hell yeah. I was surprised surprised that there was still, because you said you only made like 300 or however many, and I was like, oh, sweet.
But yeah, I'm looking at two boxes with 150 copies just sitting there.
All right, I'll go find you 149 more fans. so you can like deplete the rest.
That would be great. Yeah. All right. Get to work.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you so much. Great conversation, and stay in touch. And no pressure, but October 2020. Keep that open.
I'm telling you, if I'm still on this earth, I will be there October 2020. I'll see you then.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.